WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I'm giving some Betty Boops away here. We had to postpone the GNA Coney Island Hot Dog event. We're going to be doing that into May. Andy has family and babies and things. Good things are happening. Beautiful things are happening, including next Wednesday we'll be with the Conrad family at Conrad's Crabs in Perry Hall. Got some fun guests coming by for that one. Few early commitments, and I hope they don't bonk out on us on the 27th. Don Moeller's here. We call this segment in these Wise Conversations the Recon each and every week, and we're on the front end of the January 6th situation. We're on the front end of politics in our state and other. We're going to have Wes Moore on. We're going to have Shannon Sneed on. We're going to be talking about state politics. But on a global scale, Don, it occurred to me the other day, and I don't want to bring us down to start the thing, but this Putin thing feels very World War III the longer it lingers in and the more we see people getting mutilated in war crimes and all of that. And then we say, where are we going to be on all of this? And DC has gotten even more complicated since Trump, right? In the aftermath with January 6th and what is truth and what's a fair election. We talked 3 years ago to Nancy Pelosi about, hey, DC's a mess. How do we fix it? These are really turbulent times we're in right now. The more they peel back the onion of what happened on January 6th.
Oh, well, there is a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the Putin-Ukraine piece of this, because I think it's pretty clear, Nestor, that the West is at a crossroads. And it's not just the United States that's trying to figure out where it stands on the issue of Russia invading Ukraine and what our next steps should be. I think as we record this, and by the time this is posted, we will have results, and we will be talking next week, actually, about the results of a French election where one of the candidates, Marie Le Pen, is running much stronger. She's a Trump candidate in France, on the verge of perhaps doing the unthinkable of bringing another supporter of authoritarianism to a Western nation, someone who appears to have pro-Putin leanings. And the thought that Emmanuel Macron could lose to such a person, you know, months ago would have seemed unthinkable. And what that
of course, Macron called her his banker, her banker.
Yeah. Putin. I mean, it's really pretty terrifying. I have some friends who live outside of Paris. They are not they're not happy. They're very, very concerned. And we see that this kind of discussion that we have in this country is taking place all over the world. You mentioned the January 6th committee. There are new texts and emails that are coming out. There's information being reported in a variety of new books that once again show that particularly Republican leadership, the McCarthys, the McConnells, all of them despise Donald Trump. They know how unstable Donald Trump is. They simply have made really that proverbial decision with the devil in that they cannot figure out how to remain in power without the Donald Trump base. If they could devise a way, a metric to figure out how to have electoral success and throw Trump overboard, they would throw him overboard quicker than Captain
Hook. Impossible, right? On the back roads of this country. And the more I've traveled outside of urban areas anywhere, I'm talking all over the state of Maryland. I did 30 crab cakes in 30 days. I'm going back this year. The Confederate flags, the Trump flags, the F. Biden flags. There's an F. blank CK Biden sign at the front of Colgate Elementary when the kids get on and off the bus in front right. of an elementary school in my county, in Johnny O's County, and, you know, that's what you're up against here, where there's been a true division. And I remember having these conversations with you 5-6 years ago, right? Like what this would mean, that you divide, that truly divide the country, not unify, but divide the country. And the January 6th thing is amazing because it is, and it's the crime of this century in plain sight, the orchestration of it, all the money, all the credit cards, all the buses, all the people, where they were, their cell phones tying them to towers. And I mean, you talk about Big Brother. You know, in 1865, they come in with muskets. Nobody would have ever known who's in the hood. But in the modern era, these people videoed themselves in live time doing it all the way around, from the goof with the shaman to the guys putting their feet up and destroying Nancy Pelosi's office. All of these people then plead, well, I was in the cult or whatever. I don't even know. All the plea bargaining and all the stuff that's gone on the last 12 months that I've seen on a daily basis. This woman flew on a jet from Texas and you know, she almost got shot. And then there was the who shot the woman that was trying to break into Congress in the middle of an insurrection, and she got shot in the head, and they wondered why. It's amazing how the narrative, and we all watched the same show, right? We all watched it happen that day. It's not that long ago. It was 15 months ago. You and I were texting in real time. I was trying to do content that day. I remember saying to my wife that morning, I'm like, there's going to be trouble down there today. I saw it on Twitter. I said, there's going to be trouble down there today. I hope they've got this handled. Then I thought, oh, who's running the country? There will be nobody there to handle it. So 15 months later, the fact that 35% of the country thinks it was a good idea and it was cool and they wish they would have been there too, that blows my mind. Like, that's the hardest part, that prosecuting the crime of the century in plain sight, where everybody's evidence is there and all of that, making Margie Batshit, whatever her name is, making her constituents believe that she was complicit in trying to overthrow the government. I'm not even sure they know what the government is. I'm not sure they watched Schoolhouse Rock. They voted for her in mass. So making people who voted the other way ever believe that Donald Trump might be dishonest or might be a criminal or might have had ill intent, we're so far past that. And that's the part that blows my mind, because these people don't associate him with Putin. They don't associate him with fascism or tyranny. They associate us as liberals and the bad guys that are coming to take their guns or whatever the cause is that day. Disney, LBGT, whatever the thing they can move that to, but it's never moving our economy or moving the government. And it really is a fealty to Donald Trump that I don't know that I ever could have predicted 5 years ago, and certainly not in the, I thought the day of the insurrection, I thought, well, this is going to be the end for some of my sane friends to say, this isn't cool. But instead he said election was fixed, and 15 months later, it feels like none of these people can be prosecuted because of their constituency.
Amen. 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 It's
I'll get the Orioles right for you too, but at least I'm seeing this.
I don't think we'll ever agree on the Orioles, but I think that it's a major dilemma that Democrats are facing. And just recently, there were a couple of developments that I thought were interesting. One is that, you know, James Carville, the raging Cajun, once again spoke, because half the time James speaks, you think, well, that makes a lot of sense. Half the time you go, oh, he's just carrying on. But this week I thought he made a good point again. And he said, look, bottom line is, when you look at these people, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Matt Gaetzes, the Paul Gosars, the Lauren Boberts, I mean, these people now are pretty much in control of the Republican narrative. I mean, look at the insanity, Nestor, of really what you're talking about and the fealty to the leader. Where J.D. Vance, you know, who, you know, author, Hillbilly Elegy, people, you know, millions of people have read the book. He was so critical of Trump, calling Trump basically pretty much an idiot and anti-American and everything. But the minute J.D. Vance wanted to be a United States senator, he kissed the ring, and Trump and he now walk hand in hand. And Vance.
Well, it's an amazing show of cowardice for me. I mean, from Marco Rubio to Ted Cruz to whatever Chris Christie was trying to do to whatever Tulsi Gabbard is up to on any given day, the fealty is it's really disturbing. I mean, and the lack of acknowledgement of truth. Yeah, what the truth to be in that building on January 6th, it wasn't a crime. It was a high crime, for me, you and I are different on death penalty, but you're storming into our Capitol trying to, you know, you get shot in the head coming in, trying to come in with guns, then you know, you got what you deserved. So,
well,
go ahead.
No, you said cowardice. I mean, I want, because I think you're onto something, and I think it has to do with power. I mean, listen.
Well, Maggie McMorrow, right? So you wanted to talk about
her. I'm going to get to McMorrow.
That's the antithesis of that. That's the other side of, you're not going to call me a baby killer and an enabler to turn children
and
gay and think that's insane. And banning books and all of the other nonsense that goes along with wherever the nose sniffs to the fire hydrant of these issues that are, I don't even know what they're red herring. I don't even know what to call it. It's insane.
Before he decided to run for Senate from the great state of Ohio, I want you to just listen to a couple of things that J.D. Vance said. He said, "I think most people are not very ideological, and Trump, while I find him loathsome, he called Trump, touches a legitimate nerve." He then goes on to say, "We are, whether we like it or not, the party of lower income, lower educated white people. And I'm saying we need to appeal to those people, basically." I mean, it is least common denominator. It's absolutely looking down your nose at the voters they're supposed to represent. And excuse me, you mentioned the others as to why, you know, they rallied around the president. Because if you go back to January 6th, and if folks want to go back and listen to Recons right after January the 6th, you and I both said that was the moment, Nestor. We've talked about it a lot. For 48 hours, it looked as if the Republicans had found their spine and were going to cut the head off of the snake. But here's what happened. And I promise you, this is what happened. They did some polling, and they found that if they cut the head off the Donald Trump snake, his base went away. And if you wonder how fragile it is.
Went away, meaning they won't vote, that they didn't vote so much to begin with. They weren't really voters as in the Ronald Reagan kind of conservative way, following issues.
You need no
better. Information voters is what they used to be called, right?
No better example than the two Senate races in Georgia, where John Ossoff and Ralph Warnock both won squeakers, primarily because Trump had convinced his base in Georgia that the election had been stolen and they should not vote. And I think as Republicans saw the reality of that, they said, "Oh my God, we cannot win." So the private text and emails where Kevin McCarthy says, and I quote, "I am done with this guy," lasted a week or two before McCarthy ran to Mar-a-Lago to grab cheeseburger and french fries and kiss the ring. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, you would say that's politics, though. That's the way you win. And that's probably what's wrong with America, that's the way you win.
Well, I'm saying, and I think that's, And let me jump back.
Winning is all that matters to Ted Cruz. That's pretty obvious. We're not talking about, you know, deeply spiritual, foundational, principled humans here. We're talking about a guy that took his family to Cancun in the middle of a snowstorm. You know what I mean?
And then the lights went out. Let me agree with what you said, is that you have to win because elections have consequences. And if you don't think elections have consequences, you're not paying attention. You're not following the Supreme Court. If you can't picture, and again, I think Carville said, I think the term he used was, we got to understand, they are really, the Republican Party now is simply out and out weird. I think that was the term Carville used. And he said, you have a lot of really crazy people. And what the Democrats have to do is rather than trying to rant and rave, I think, and scream about those people, they have to paint a picture for folks. I always invoke my departed mother, who used to make me so mad, and she was so right when she'd say, look, bottom line is, I don't want you hanging around with those kids because I know what those kids are up to. And people judge you by the company you keep. And it used to infuriate me. She was always right. She was always right.
Part of this is vilification of the other side. And that's where we'll bring the Megan McMorrow situation in, because when you're Ted Cruz, his number one thing is they're liberals. They're the bad guys. They eat babies. The vilification of this is where this young lady in Michigan really pushed back. The video went viral. It was a prepared statement. She's a hell of a writer and orator, and she's an elected official. And this was a pushback that I think most people, in my case, people would say, well, you're to the left of left of left. I've been accused of that lately. I'm probably way more in the middle on so many things. But one of the things that bothers me is there is no togetherness in D.C. in the politics. And part of it is the outrageousness of accusations that you have to push back at some point. You have to say, I don't eat babies. Other than saying, well, it's pretty obvious I don't eat babies. Most people would, you know, who've known me 53 years, know I don't eat babies, and they call me a baby eater. I don't know. You're Mr. PR, right? And, you know, do you issue the press release and push back and say, you know, I did not do that awful thing you said I did, or you just let it blow into the wind? Well, and in the old days, you would let it blow into the wind and say, that's so outrageous that we have a pizza parlor where we keep prostitutes from Thailand and eat babies and bake them in the corner. And you're going to accuse me of that? And you want me to honestly take the podium and defend myself from that? And this woman found a way to punch back. And I think a lot of folks noticed that this week.
Well, for those listeners who wonder what in the heck Nestor and I are talking about, just recently, a state senator, a young woman from Michigan, woke up to see in her inbox a fundraising email from another state senator accusing her of wanting, as Nestor said, to groom and sexualize kindergarten students. Now, this state senator, who had enough and took to the floor of the Senate in Michigan, Senator Mallory McMorrow, her sin, according to this opponent, was that she was advocating for the protection of LGBTQ individuals and young men and women. And at that moment, Senator McMorrow got up and basically said, let me just quote her directly. I didn't expect to wake up yesterday to the news that the senator from the 22nd district had overnight accused me by name of grooming and sexualizing children in a fundraising email for herself. So I sat on it for a while. This goes to your point, Nestor. What do I do? Why me? Then I realized it's because I'm the biggest threat to your hollow, hateful scheme, because you can't claim you are targeting marginalized kids in the name of, quote, parental rights if another parent is standing up to say no. And she goes on and she talks about her religious beliefs. We're always uncomfortable, right? I wrote about it a few weeks ago. We don't like to share our own particular Christian beliefs, but she pointed out what a hypocrite this woman was. And I think that the bottom line was she ended, you know, by saying, I hope you brought in a few dollars. I hope it made you sleep well last night. I know who I am. I know what faith and service means and what it calls for in this moment. We will not let hate win. I think this senator, this young state senator, Mallory McMorrow.
By the way, I called her Megan. Mallory's such a better – Mallory's a family ties name.
Mallory McMorrow may have given Democrats the playbook. You know, it may be for those old enough to remember when Senator Wilson called out McCarthy many, many moons ago.
Have you no decency?
Have you no decency, sir? This may be
one of those moments in your history class, Don.
There you go. As it goes more viral and more viral. So it is a real challenge. But I think the challenge for Democrats, and you alluded to it in the beginning, I think it's all connected, right? What do we do about Putin and how we articulate that with a president who's not very articulate? I mean, Joe Biden is many things. He's done a wonderful job of bringing NATO together after the former president had basically tried to destroy the oldest alliance that we have. So Joe Biden,
it is amazing how old and tired he looks.
But he's not. Yeah, he looks old. He looks tired.
And how what an easy target that is for the Republicans. Right. That it would be the target. I would go. Well, I mean, Trump was a different kind of target because it was a disgrace. It was a 4-year disgrace to our country that I still swallow hard, hold my passport, and, you know, thank God that they didn't hang Nancy Pelosi out on the steps 15 months ago and find Mike Pence in a hallway somewhere and do damage, right? Like, I'm thankful it didn't come to that, but it was never out of my mind that it could have come to that. That's where we sat after watching it for 4 years in a plague and disinfect yourself and holding the Bible upside down and, like, all of that. I love the place we're in. I'm good with Biden, but I really wish this country were ready for something else. You know what I mean? Because I think about this on the other end when the pendulum swings back, as some of my moderate conservative, but I voted for Trump anyway, even though he's crazy. I voted for him because I would never vote for Hillary. Her emails, the baby she eats, whatever it was that made those folks swing in that direction. They're not swinging back to vote for, I don't know, Nate. Who's the next Democrat, Don? That's a hell of a question. We talk about Biden. I mean, they've turned Kamala Harris into a punchline. And at some point, based on the way Biden looks, she might run the country for a minute or five or three or at some point. I don't know. But I don't know what they're going to run 2 years from now after this, because it's not him. Right. So that's another problem later on. We have to figure out Putin between here and there. But from a long term playbook, this thing swings back to, if the Republicans were sane, they'd have a guy like Adam Kinzinger ready to go to run with Cheney or, you know, something like that. But they're not going to have that. They're going to have this fascist thing, that this fealty thing that they have, and finding a way on the other end to run against that. Because Biden's not going to run. And that's the big question. Well, what's the long play here? What's the long play?
Well, I'm not
Is the
sure.
long play Ron DeSantis as the president of the United States? I hope the hell not.
Well, I think he certainly plans to run. I'm not sure your calculus about Biden, and it brings up an interesting point, Nestor, about age and how Americans view age. I'm not sure that you necessarily will be proven right on that. There are reports that he has told former President Obama that he does indeed plan to run again. I mean, Joe Biden will be 80, right? Here's the thing. In the age of television and you know, maybe this is where we stop this version of the recon. We come back next week and talk about mask mandates and federal judges and the Federalist Society.
Yeah, just wait a week. It'll change.
Much more than what we can get into on that. But, you know, I was 10 years old in 1960 for the Nixon-Kennedy debates. And the famous, famous historical reports that folks talk about all the time is that people, by a pretty wide margin, who watched the debates on television thought John Kennedy won the debates. People who only listened to the debates on radio thought Richard Nixon won the debates. It was basically seen as the beginning, the modern era of the presidency and television. A lot of people, from Joe McGinnis and others, have written about that over the years.
It's amazing how that devolved into Donald Trump insulting everyone. Like, it's incredible. Really incredible.
Without a doubt. And the problem, and I'm fond of Joe Biden, and I will never forget that he at least helped deliver us from a national nightmare. But there is no getting around the fact that the optics around Joe Biden, who is not very articulate. Now, I would say to folks, understand that has been a problem for Joe for years, that all the way back when he ran for president, I guess.
Joe's strength was in being a good human, not in being a good orator.
Not a good orator.
Well, he had a speech impediment, for crying out loud. Let's start with that. What kind of radio host would I have been if I had a speech impediment?
And he
wouldn't have had a career.
And he's compensated for that over the years. So
I speak clearly, and BAO was never going to hire me.
You mix that in with the fact that he's had some injuries to his legs, to his back. And when he walks, you almost feel as if you're holding your breath.
Oh, he feels like he's in pain.
And the next step, he could take a tumble, right? So, and you know, at the same time.
And Franklin Delano Roosevelt led the country from a wheelchair.
No, and hit it from the
successfully.
Country.
Some would say the best ever.
A very different time. He hit it from the country, and now we have, you know, you've got the reports coming out about Senator Dianne Feinstein at age 90, who evidently has what they politely call good days and bad. It takes you back to when Senator Strom Thurmond stayed in the Senate until he was 100, Robert Byrd until he was 92. But the thought that you would have
that speaks to idiots in the constituency. That speaks to people not paying attention to what's going on. And I think Trump awakened people to what's going on. But if they put on Fox News, they have a different view of what the world is than anything that's rooted in truth. I mean, it really is an amazing thing that and I see these Alex Jones guys going to jail now. I hope we can continue that trend without pardons.
Well, and again, follow the money, right? I mean, Rupert Murdoch is not an idiot, despite what you think. He discovered early on that right-wing extremism sells. He said, all right, I look at the ratings, and they lead pretty much every single day, certainly at nighttime, because millions and millions of Americans buy the popcorn.
Their lead host is cheerleading Putin.
Right, right.
To annihilate the Ukrainian people. I don't know what else to say. I can drop the mic with that, right? Like, that's all you need to say. Like,
no, that is, the mic.
This is being sanctioned and consumed by people in this country. It's the things that I always say this to you, that I have an FCC license. I always thought that if I broadcasted that kind of stuff, they would just, the militia would just come and take my license,
right,
and move me off the property and say, you're not broadcasting radio free Havana here, kid. You know, no offense. We're not allowing that with the FCC. We're just not going to allow that.
They break all of the rules. And you know, as you have preview of coming attractions, next week we will talk about federal judge Catherine Kimball Mizell, who, with a stroke of a pen this week, overruled federal health mandate from the CDC. And I think what folks are missing about that, we're going to talk about her next week.
Is that our courts are messed up?
Forget the mask mandate part of it. What is the implication in future health crises for the United States of America? Not to mention the fact that she was appointed. Think about this, Nestor. This is the mic drop and we'll get out of here. When she was appointed to the Federal District Court of the United States of America by Donald Trump, confirmed by the Senate after Donald Trump lost, she had never been in a courtroom. She had never tried a case. She is a federal district court judge who had never been in a courtroom. Mitch McConnell and the minions.
I hope the guy that stuck the needles in my back on my back, I hope he had more experience than that.
Remarkable, right? I mean, if you told people that, if that were in a Netflix special, you would say, well, that's entertaining, but it's silly. Nobody would be a federal district court judge who's never been in a courtroom. We will talk about Judge Mizell and its impact next week. That's the recon. In the meantime, let's keep that pitching going.
I'm getting ready for draft night, the Ravens next week, and that'll be fun. Luke is monitoring both the Orioles and Ravens for us.
What position do you want them to fill first?
I don't have a thought like that. I want them to get the best player. I think they have too many needs across, and I don't need them to draft a wide receiver. I don't need them to sign Deebo Samuel. But
because you know why? Here we go again. Never a straight line. You know why I don't want them to draft Deebo Samuels? Is I don't think Greg Roman, and I don't know Greg, never met him. I have no feelings one way or the other about Greg, but I've seen his offenses for many years now. I don't think Greg Roman would know how to use Deebo Samuel. So I think all of a sudden the Deebo Samuel that we saw under Kyle Shanahan might not show up in Owings Mills. So I agree with you. Way too many holes. So I guess we revert back to Ozzie, best player on the board, right?
Yeah, and that's the way it should be. They have eight different positions they could draft, and they will draft for all of them, not just in the first round. The thing that's exciting about their draft is they have so many high picks, and this speaks to how good they are at what they do in stacking a board, getting a board ready. Now they have to go out and ready, aim, fire, and find more Rashad Batemans and less Rashad Perrymans. He is Don Moeller.
Wait a minute, real quick on that before you take us out. I think your boy Eric DaCosta, and you love Eric, and you chat with him all the time. I think if there's never really a hot seat in Owings Mills, but I think it's time for Eric to find some stars. Eric has found role players. He's not found many stars. And if you look at that 2019 draft, it was horrific. And it's time. I'm pulling for Eric. It's time to find some stars. We'll come back and talk about that.
Well, there's plenty of picks. So they'll have them at the top of the board. We'll be following it all week long. Don Moeller can be found along with me at BaltimorePositive.com. Luke will be monitoring all things Ravens. If there's any news, I'm wearing my Coons Baltimore Forge shirt. We'll get the text service out first things first and make that thing happen for you as well. Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Got my Betty Boop here as well as Goodwill Industries. And I had John Baylog on. We're doing a little more closet cleaning for our friends at Goodwill before I get the Goodwill van over here to pick up the spring cleaning goods. We're going to be moving the show to Conrad's Crabs in White Marsh, Perry Hall. They say it's Perry Hall. I think it's White Marsh, but they're going to say Perry Hall. Bel Air Road, that's on Wednesday from 2 until 5. I am Nestor. He is Don. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.